WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The closure of non-essential businesses is taking a major toll on Maryland's economy. Comptroller Peter Franchot estimates the state will lose up to $2.8 billion for the fiscal year 2020, which ends July 1st. Governor Larry Hogan froze state spending across all agencies, instituted a hiring freeze, and says all state agencies will have to make cuts.
In addition, the state will be tapping into and spending much of, perhaps even all of, the state's rainy day fund balance.
He also says he's unlikely to sign any bills submitted by the General Assembly that require increased spending. Businesses around the region are taking hits, with many forced to close. In Arlington County, the Director of Economic Development, Telly Tucker, says a survey sent out to more than 500 businesses found 70% of respondents said the pandemic is either very or extremely disruptive to their operations.
There are a number of resources available, both through the Federal CARES Act legislation and through the Small Business Administration. Our staff is available to help any Arlington businesses navigate and apply for those resources.
Tucker adds the county is also looking into offering eligible small businesses emergency grants of up to $10,000. Tourism businesses in Virginia are losing lots of money. The Travel Association says spending in the industry plummeted from $521 million in the first week of March to $119 million by the end of the month after the stay-at-home order went into effect. The last week in March, travel industry spending was down 78% compared to the same week last year. And if you're thinking about traveling to Ocean City this weekend, don't.
With this being a holiday weekend, you may be tempted to head to Ocean City, but the beach, boardwalk, and inlet parking lot remain closed. Mayor Rick Meehan again is reminding people to stay away unless you are essential personnel. The emergency declaration signed last month restricts short-term stays at hotels or rental properties through the end of April. Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.com.
One thing you can do to pass the time this weekend is continue binging the Tiger King docuseries on Netflix. Many of us have already watched all the episodes, but tomorrow we can get a new taste of Tiger King.
The Netflix series had more than 34 million viewers in just 10 days after it was released. Many left asking for more. And they're getting it. Comedian Joel McHale will host an 8th episode, an after show, which he promotes will feature several familiar faces in the series.
To see what's happened in their lives since the release of the series. It's eye-opening and hopefully funny.
The Tiger King and I premieres Easter Sunday. I'm Clayton Neville.
Traffic and weather next on WMAL.
It's everything you need to know, Sundays on WMAL. Starting at 5 a.m., it's VA Sunday Magazine. At 5:30, hear the Chris McKay Show. At 7, it's Heroes Talk Radio with Dave Ahrens. At 8, it's the Eric Stewart Show, pointing you home. Hear The Wise Investor at 9, Dr. Tom Rosell Live at 11, Purity Products at 2, Mortgage Radio at 3, Real Estate Today at 7, and at 9 p.m., it's Lawyer in Your Corner with Ryan Wilson on 105.9 FM WMAL.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. A confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Problems still on 66 westbound in Manassas at Business 234, where an accident on the westbound side takes up the left shoulder, the left lane, and the left center lane. So stay to your right and allow yourself some extra travel time. On the eastbound side, you will find the left lane closed as well due to the incident on the westbound side. Also in Rockville, keep in mind that a portion of Falls Road southbound is closed at Tuckerman Lane due to a pole and wires down in the roadway. Traveling 270, do watch out for a work zone southbound at Quince Orchard Road along the left side and northbound at 121 in the left lane. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Plenty of sunshine on this Saturday, highs around 60 degrees today, a few spots in the lower 60s. Overnight, clouds will increase late, lows back in the 40s. For your Easter Sunday, mostly cloudy, some isolated showers, best chance during the evening, highs around 70 degrees. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Hey, Vince Colonnais here. We're all trying to get through the coronavirus, and as we do, we at WMAL appreciate your support in turning to us for the latest information. We also appreciate the support of our WMAL advertisers and your support of them. Please continue to patronize our valued advertisers as permitted and once we get through this crisis. And we will get through this together. Thank you for listening to and supporting WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9 FM, WMAL.
Thank you for being with us on the Saturday morning update as we celebrate Easter and Passover weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning and a happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter, and I hope some of our listeners had a happy Passover.
Bernie Sanders will be spending the weekend relaxing a little bit after suspending his campaign, leaving Joe Biden the pretty much clean shot at the presidential nomination on the Democratic ticket. But Bernie Sanders is not suspending his efforts to influence the Democratic Party platform. What do we know?
Well, we know one thing. Joe Biden himself put it best. Bernie Sanders did not just launch a campaign. He launched a movement. Many young people, many people outside the political system, many angry people who didn't vote or even went over to vote for Donald Trump in 2016 followed the banner of the senator from Vermont. In suspending his campaign, he underscored the same themes that led him for a while to be the front runner for the Democratic nomination. Those include a strong emphasis on climate change, a changing of the economy under the Green New Deal, national health insurance, and, oh yes, the forgiveness of student loans. All of that certainly resonated with young people, and Joe Biden does not really differ that much on any of those planks. So it is very likely, if not a foregone conclusion, they will be in the Democratic platform. That's not all Bernie Sanders wants. He was very careful in his wording about supporting Joe Biden, meaning he barely mentioned it at all. He's looking at getting a Democratic nominee more to his liking and more simpatico to taking over his movement in a few years. Remember, Joe Biden, if elected, will be the oldest president at age 77. And will take office at the age of 78. Who does Bernie want? Perhaps Kamala Harris, the senator from California, perhaps Governor Whitmer of Michigan, or as President Trump puts it, that woman from Michigan. Who knows? But it will be key to watch who the understudy to a President Biden would be. Methinks that he or she will have the imprimatur of one Bernie Sanders. So in other words, he didn't get to be president, but like a lot of people in history, Adlai Stevenson, George McGovern, and many others, his imprint on the party is going to be lasting.
So the presidential primaries obviously have taken on a completely different look this year with the coronavirus situation. Looking ahead to the November election, Democrats have some ideas in mind for voting by mail. President Trump certainly opposed to it. Where do you see this debate going between Democrats and Republicans?
Sadly, Rick, this is going to dominate the debate over the next stimulus package. Congress already passed unanimously a $2 trillion package to assist in the fight against coronavirus, as well as stimulate our moribund economy. Now another package is in the works. For the most part, packages that had to do with non-germane things were kept out of the last package, with a few exceptions, such as the assistance to the John F. Kennedy Center, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the like. But now Speaker Pelosi's talking about something different. $2 billion for election assistance. What this means is longer early voting periods and mail-in ballots for all Americans. So in other words, if you can't make it to the polls, if you haven't signed up for an absentee ballot with the reason that's usually required, you'll just be able to mail in a ballot anyway. Republicans cry foul. This kind of thing benefits the Democrats, and it takes away, they say, local control of elections. They just want to simply empower election officials, city clerks, and the like. So there's going to be a major battle over this. One tactic that Republicans talk about is attaching to every piece of legislation dealing with election assistance a mandatory voter ID amendment. In other words, the voter ID that's been blasted as racist and designed to limit the turnout would be required for any measure that Congress is going to spend tax dollars to assist on in terms of voting. That means anyone who benefits from a voting plan funded by the taxpayers will have to show some form of identification, be it a driver's license, a library card, or the like, but just show the same ID that we have to when we board airplanes. This is not going to be a pretty fight, and it has very little to do with the coronavirus or the economy, but it's coming.
The daily White House Task Force on Coronavirus press briefings have become a fixture for afternoon and evening cable television. Question for you. The president said Friday that this will be the biggest decision he's likely ever made in his life as to when we get back into business in this country. Tell us about the impending tug of war that we'll expect to see at 1600.
Well, Rick, that tug of war is going on right now. And when it comes to doing the tugging, Dr. Birx and Dr. Anthony Fauci, two fixtures on the daily coronavirus briefings, are telling the president, go easy on this. Don't do it all right away. As Dr. Fauci put it, it's not like flicking on a light switch. And that's true. When May Day, the date that the big change is likely to come about, it's not as though we'll see restaurants filled, movie theaters packed, and people boarding the buses and the cabs and Ubers to go to work. It will be more likely done in an incremental way. I would say some examples of this are in Austria, the Czech Republic, and Denmark. Three European countries that began immediate lockdown and are now gradually going back to work and going back to business. How gradual it'll be and in what order it's done, we can't say. But one thing is sure, the president himself cannot do this. The CDC requirements run out, and it will, for the most part, be left up to the states. My guess is that governors who sit in hot spots, Cuomo of New York, Hogan of Maryland, and a few others, will keep the quarantining, the lockdown, and the social distancing in place. The rest of the country can fend for itself. Arkansas, for example, never really had a lockdown of any kind. My guess is it's going to be gradual, and it may take the summer, but it's going to start in May.
Good news for Boris Johnson and the British people this week.
The Prime Minister, who seemed at death's door on Monday night when he went in the intensive care unit is now out of intensive care and in the ward with the rest of the patients at St. Thomas Hospital in London. And in the meantime, just as patients cheered him as he was being wheeled from intensive care to a regular ward, people stood outside the hospital, they cheered, they prayed, and they cried, all for their prime minister, the man that everyone calls Bojo. This is a dramatic take, and it shows a good side to the virus crisis. It was only a few months ago that political insults flew like shrapnel, and everybody was angry over the Brexit issue. Boris Johnson was no exception. His own brother and sister, who opposed him on leaving the European Union, stopped speaking to him. All of that has ended right now, and the people are saying, carry on, Mr. Prime Minister.
A lot of finger-pointing about the coronavirus. Who knew what when? Who's playing favorites? And House Republicans want the World Health Organization boss out. Even talk of trying to bring him in to testify?
Oh, yes. This is Dr. Kesiounousis. I hope I said that name right. He's an Egyptian microbiologist, and he's the Director General of the World Health Organization. You might want to call him Dr. Who. Well, Republicans in the U.S. House have had their share of Dr. Who, and they don't believe he was truthful in explaining the depth of the Chinese origins of the virus, and in fact has kept a lot of information away from the American public. Congressman Guy Raichenthaler of Pennsylvania, I hope I said that name right too, he's introduced a piece of legislation to take the United States out of the WHO by withholding its funding until there are answers about just what China knew about the virus and when did they know it. I might add, if you don't think this is significant and it's inside baseball, remember something. In the last two-year period, the U.S. gave $893 million, that's nearly a billion, to the UN-sponsored affiliate WHO. That includes $236 million in dues. In other words, this country is only giving 14% of the budget of the WHO, but it's the largest single donor to this organization that serves the international community in the area of health. One thinks that the U.S. deserves some straight answers about where coronavirus came from and how involved were the Chinese. We'll see how far this legislation goes and what answers come from Dr. Who.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. You and Colleen have a lovely Easter weekend.
My lovely Colleen and I will have a happy Easter, and we wish all a happy Easter, and we're delighted to know that Governor Hogan declared the Easter Bunny an essential worker.
That's great. It's good to know. It is the Saturday morning update. It is 7:18. We're going to talk to Cheryl Atkinson next. We got Tony Schaefer coming up and KT McFarland. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia on 66 westbound in Manassas at Business 234, an accident still takes up the two left lanes. Stay to your right and use caution there. Also in Maryland, there is an accident reported southbound 95 just before 212. That is reported to be on the right shoulder, not causing much of a delay. Do keep in mind in Rockville that Falls Road is still closed on the southbound side at Tuckerman Lane due to a utility problem, a pole and wires down in the roadway. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny and warmer on this Saturday. We will have some breezy conditions at times, around 10 to 15 miles per hour, so not nearly as bad. Highs around 60 degrees. Clouds increase late tonight, lows back in the 40s. For your Easter Sunday, mostly cloudy, some isolated showers, a few in the morning, better chance during the evening, highs around 70 degrees. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Leggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
40 degrees in Washington at 7:19 on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. It is great to have you, and a happy Easter and Passover weekend to you. We are joined by Cheryl Atkinson. She is the host of Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock on ABC7. Cheryl, it's great to have you with us on holiday weekend.
Thank you so much. Happy Easter, everybody.
Well, I watched Full Measure last weekend, and I saw your interviews at Fort Detrick, and you have a follow-up piece this week, and I think it's really interesting what you reported last weekend, but you really have more background on the coronavirus and what they're doing in the fight against it.
Yeah, you know, so many unanswered questions we'll be learning, I'm sure, as the weeks and months go by with the benefit of hindsight. But some of the things I learned from talking to this chief virologist at Fort Detrick, John Dye, was that coronaviruses have been circulating in the U.S. population for years, multiple viruses that do not have the kind of lethality we think the current one has. So what makes it so different? I also asked him how long it's been around, because he and other scientists agree the first case we heard of in the U.S. certainly wasn't the first case that happened. And, you know, the odds are that we didn't catch the first one. So I talked to him about how long he thinks it's been around, which then leads to questions about how many people may be immune to it, having already gotten coronavirus, but then asymptomatic, maybe never know they had it, and hopefully perhaps immune. So these are all the things we're going to talk with him about Sunday on Full Measure.
You know, what's striking to me is how controversial and political a pandemic has gotten in this country, and we've seen the criticism of the administration and now the talk of a new commission to be formed by the Democrats and Adam Schiff to investigate the Trump administration's handling of the coronavirus. On top of that, you have come under fire this week for simply trying to set the record straight. And if you could give us a little quick background on what happened after you saw the mashup or the montage on The Daily Show that really mocked conservative pundits, conservative hosts, and the administration for that matter. You saw that, and then what happened?
Well, there's been a propaganda effort to controversialize scientists and reporters who say things that are actually truthful and in line with what CDC has on their website and in line with what many liberal publications have said about and are saying even today about coronavirus in terms of lethality and whether the death rate has been accurately calculated and who it hits most. And I'm not sure exactly what's behind it. We'll know more, I think, as time goes on, but definitely a propaganda effort to controversialize certain people. And in this case, this was conservatives at Fox News that I was able to show said very similar and sometimes identical things to what public health officials and CNN and the New York Times had said, sometimes almost word for word. And two points there. First of all, a lot of what they're saying was true and is true today, but it's being controversialized by The Daily Show and others as if they said false things. And then second of all, of course, the point that the same things were said by almost all concerned. So why is this, you know, these battle lines being drawn? I'm not exactly sure, and I'm certainly being drawn into it for pointing it out. But it's a fascinating phenomenon. With any big news story like this, there is the news that you see and hear, and then the subtext that probably has a lot to do with things we don't yet know about. And, you know, that's sometimes the more interesting part of the story.
You're able to demonstrate that obviously health officials and other news personalities on sort of the other side of the spectrum were saying many of the same things, and you have come under serious fire this week.
Well, I've gotten used to the notion that when a reporter is off the narrative, especially if they're reporting fairly on something that is there's very powerful people trying to construct narratives around, you're going to be under fire. And the New York Times had targeted me and written about me falsely and had to correct their defamatory article, as you know. There's been other people writing similar things. So, you know, I just intend to continue trying to get the facts as best as I can. And if they contradict other reporting out there, so be it at times. But that's just what I hope to do.
There's an interesting article at newsbusters.org. It was written on Monday. The headline, ex-CBS reporter Cheryl Atkinson brings hard facts to smearing comedians. And it really lays out what has happened here. And it's a very interesting read. And I'm just so glad to see that you pointed out those facts, because so much just gets thrown out there and nobody fact checks it. Nobody looks at the other side of things. And you've gone ahead and done that, and now you're, you know, highly criticized for it. It's just the polarization in this country. In times of a crisis like this, you would think maybe we could try and come together just a little bit, but...
Well, and just one more comment on that, and my third book is coming out. The landscape has been taken over by efforts, you know, political and corporate propagandists that control the narrative. It's not a matter of that they want the facts out. There are too many people that want to control the landscape for reasons we don't always know.
One other story you've got on Full Measure tomorrow, and it's probably the only story we'll see about sports this month, and that has to do with the NCAA and their reaction to college athletes now being compensated for their services. And this is a fascinating story to me.
This is coming soon. You know, we designed this story after researching it to air during March Madness, and then there was no March Madness. But, you know, we're taking a look at, I didn't realize this was almost a done deal. California's passed a law that will allow college athletes to get compensated. Other states are doing the same, which then is sort of forcing the hand of the NCAA, which may make a national policy so that they don't have 50 state laws they're dealing with. What does this mean? Well, you know, athletes in college will be able to presumably get endorsement deals, like with shoe companies, maybe drive up in a Ferrari. And a lot of people think that's a good thing and well-deserved. A lot of people think it's a bad thing. And we'll have both sides on Full Measure.
That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. And Cheryl, thank you so much for taking some time to be with us.
Thank you.
7:27, you're listening to the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and we'll get some analysis on some of Attorney General William Barr's comments this week, and then we'll talk with K.T. McFarland, and we'll get her read on President Trump, his handling of the coronavirus situation so far, and what to expect in his future decisions. It's all coming up on the Saturday Morning Update.
Voucher and maximum tax deduction.
1-877 cars for kids. KARS cars for kids. 1-877 cars for kids. Donate your car today.
Also accepting boats, motorcycles, RVs, and real estate donations.
Please listen. This is important. Anyone can be affected by the prescription opioid crisis. If you think you've been hurt by Purdue or its prescription opioids like OxyContin, you may be entitled to compensation as part of Purdue's bankruptcy, but you have to file a claim. Claims may include overdose, death, substance use disorder, lost wages, and neonatal abstinence syndrome. A confidential claim can be filed by individuals, a legal guardian, by survivors or relatives of people who have died or are disabled. The deadline to file a claim is June 30th, 2020, or you will lose your right to file a claim. For more information, visit PurduePharmaClaims.com, or you can call toll-free 1-844-217-0912. That's 1-844-217-0912. Paid for by Prime Clerk, LLC.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. most of us are wondering when life as usual will resume, especially business owners and their now unemployed workers. President Donald Trump talked yesterday about his desire to reopen the economy, but says models show 100,000 Americans may die from the disease in total, and there's always going to be a risk where something can flare up.
I'm going to have to make a decision, and I only hope to God that it's the right decision. But I would say without question, it's the biggest decision I've ever had to make.
President Trump suggested insurance companies pay out business interruption claims related to the coronavirus, even if coverage for a pandemic is not explicitly included in their policies. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan making some big decisions after learning the state could lose up to $2.8 billion for this fiscal year. That's a 50% decrease in revenues over the next 90 days. He issued a freeze on all state spending and a hiring freeze.
The Maryland Department of Budget and Management will be determining options and making recommendations for budget cuts, which will be required in all state agencies. This will include cuts to so-called mandated spending.
He says the state will also be spending much, if not all, of the $1.2 billion in its rainy day fund. Traffic and weather next on WMAL.
Taxes, taxes, taxes. They shouldn't be the driver behind your investment decisions, but tax efficiency could make a big difference in what you owe Uncle Sam. Hi, this is Greg Smith, co-host of WML's Wise Investor Show, reminding you that your financial advisor can help you make sure that your portfolio is tax smart and in line with your goals.
Greg Smith and the Wise Investor Group are affiliated with Robert W. Baird & Company. To reach Greg, call 1-866-758-9473 or log on to thewiseinvestorgroup.com and resolve to become a better informed Wise Investor.
Ice cream. All the ice cream in my house, in the world, and most of my stuffed animals.
My video games and, my phone.
What would you give for your freedom? Would you give your eyesight? Would you give ever seeing the sunset again? Would you give the ability to see your children's future? Thousands of brave men and women who served in the United States Armed Forces have given their eyesight in defense of our freedom. And the Blinded Veterans Association wants to give them their freedom back, but it needs your help. Go to BVA.org to find out about how BVA's free programs and services, advocacy, education, peer support, scholarships, and more help America's heroes to not just deal with the emotional and physical issues of sudden sight loss or impairment, but actually work to get them back to the independent lives they deserve to live. Go to BVA.org to find out how you can make a difference. They fought for your independence, and by going to BVA.org, you can find out how to help these veterans regain theirs. Go to BVA.org today.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On 270 southbound, south of Shady Grove Road, an accident is being reported, so do watch out for that. Also, do watch out for the problem in Rockville on Falls Road southbound at Tuckerman Lane, where the southbound lanes remain closed with the pole and wires down in the roadway. And in Maryland on 95 southbound prior to Powder Mill Road, there is an accident there on the right shoulder. Meanwhile, in Virginia, still have the accident westbound on 66 at Business 234 along the two left lanes, and an accident now being reported in the district on South Dakota Avenue at Bladensburg Road. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny, less wind today. We'll still have some breezes at times, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. High temperatures today, around 60 degrees. Lows tonight back in the 40s. With increasing clouds late, we're talking by early tomorrow morning. For your Easter Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, isolated showers early on. I think a better chance during the evening. Highs around 70 degrees, so warmer. Overall, a nice end of the weekend. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
It's the time of year to start thinking about your lawn. There are changes to Montgomery County's pesticide law to protect your family, pets, pollinators, and environment. Only organic pesticides can be used. Most weed and feed products and other synthetic pesticides and herbicides are banned. Look for signage in stores in the county selling lawn care products to help identify legal organic products. Learn more at MontgomeryCountyMD.gov/lawns.
7:34. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. A happy Easter, happy Passover weekend to you. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, a CIA-trained intel operative. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me. Always great to be on.
Well, Attorney General Barr made some comments this week and put the word out that the Justice Department is not slowing down in spite of the slowdown across the country and general workforce activity. They're not slowing down at the Justice Department, and he was talking on multiple fronts. First off, his comments about the Mueller investigation. What did you learn from what he said?
So the Mueller investigation has been problematic on two fronts for the bureaucracy. First, the IG Horowitz found multiple and I think detailed departures from procedure, material departures which could not be explained by mistakes. And that leads me to my second point, which is his comments regarding grand juries and other things which are now underway. No amount of accident-prone, lack of intelligence, individuals who just didn't know what they were doing could add up to the complete tapestry of wrongdoing that we now know to be the Russia collusion narrative. So I think he's been very forthright and very conscientious in allowing for investigators to go through the factual evidence. And I know this has been frustrating to a lot of folks who have recognized from day one that this stinks to high heaven. But I think if you look at it the way any good American who understands the importance of justice, that this has to be the way it's done. And so what he's done is he's laying out, I think, a fact-based case that shows at every juncture where a mistake could be believed once, but, you know, multiple mistakes by multiple people at the same time has to be essentially I hate to say the word, a conspiracy. There had to be something more going on. And I think that's where we're at. He's recognized it for what it is. And his comments, if I were Comey, Brennan, McCabe, Clapper, I'd be keeping a shaving kit and warm clothes close to the door just in case people show up to take me away.
Or a one-way ticket to South America.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, for a second, George Papadopoulos made the news again. Thought he'd kind of gone away. What did he say, yeah, and what's the significance?
Well, look, this is one of the things that goes back to the Mueller investigation, Rick. There was, as many of us had figured years ago, that there was audio of some of the so-called lure meetings with Papadopoulos. And lo and behold, that information was exculpatory. So, you know, basically Papadopoulos said, hey, we don't know where, you know, we weren't part of this server breach. We have no idea anything about the Hillary Clinton issue. And that information was apparently known very early on, Rick, to Mueller and his team. So this, amongst other things, which I think some of which are public, some of which will be public soon, have indicated that the Mueller investigation, the whole team knew early on that there was no evidence of Russia collusion within the campaign or with President Trump or anyone around him. So that begs the question, why did the Mueller investigation go on for over a year? I think it was almost 18 months. And this is another, you know, question I think that the Attorney General Barr needs to be looking at, is why would people drag something out when you knew exculpatory evidence existed early on? And again, this is from reporting. This is, you know, one of the reports that I've read on this is from CBS. So this is not fringe news. This is mainstream news indicating that things were known very early on in the Mueller investigation.
All right. This gives us a little bit of a segue into the inspectors general. And the two that have been in the crosshairs of President Trump, Glenn Fine and Michael Atkinson, and of course the Democrats and many of the media outlets in an uproar, you know, that Trump is firing these inspector generals out of retribution, or he wants to be, you know, free and clear to do anything he wants. They will replace those inspector generals, by the way. What is behind the firing of both Glenn Fine and Michael Atkinson?
Well, the issue is actually related between the two of them, and that's what the public may not fully understand. So let's start with Atkinson. Atkinson apparently was part of the FISA approval process over at DOJ before he became ODNI IG. So there's issues there relating to his past actions. And then going directly to his actions at ODNI, Rick, I know for a fact, based on evidence of sworn statements and meetings I've had with individuals who have fired significant and grave concerns regarding real intelligence oversight failures that Atkinson has sat on for years, literally years. And these things, some of these things are significant and are hugely damning of the intelligence community, but they had nothing to do with Trump. So it's very clear in my judgment that those things which were legitimate but just didn't meet the political narrative issues of what Atkinson was going for were never looked at. And that goes to Fine. Some of these issues really go back to Fine when he was at the Pentagon. And I consider Fine essentially, you know, kind of the grand wizard of the deep state. Some of these guys have been there forever, and all they do, their primary job is trying to find a way to explain things away and not account rather than do their job. And I think both of them have been scrutinized by new eyes, and I think that's why you're seeing now the president taking these actions. And to your point, they're going to be replaced by legitimate individuals who will be doing investigative activities. And if you just watch the news, who's screaming about their firing, I think you'll get a clue about who's all upset about them being fired.
All right, I want to turn to a video that's out there from Epoch Times. It's getting a lot of buzz. It's an investigative report on the origins of the coronavirus. You and Gordon Chang heavily featured in the video. Yeah. And if you had to kind of lay out a couple of message points from that video, what would they be?
So I do encourage, you know, the people to look at it by the fact that there's been darn little reporting by anybody, any media source about the origins of the coronavirus. Early on, there was an attempt by China to kind of dissuade people from saying it was Chinese. You know, it came from Wuhan. I don't know what else to say. The origins is Chinese. And if you examine two factors in the video, it's a long video. It's not short, but I think people will see two things out of it. First, I talk about the messaging, about the fact that no matter who you are, what side of the political spectrum you're on, you should be talking about the origins and the evidence that Chinese were actually doing some things regarding biological weapons and biological research that we need to be concerned with. The other thing is, as Gordon Chang and I both try to lay out, is that China has a strategy of dominating the Pacific Rim. And I think because they are so focused on this political objective, they are doing everything they can to dissuade the world from understanding or seeing what happened with the Wuhan virus. So I do believe China is a legitimate threat. They're not an enemy. They're a threat. It's something to be taken seriously. And we outline, I think, the idea of unrestricted warfare, the Chinese idea of one unrestricted warfare coming after us. Gordon is a China hand in particular. He understands this. I try to give things, you know, I've had conversations with people in the White House about this, but it really does indicate that the People's Republic of China are doing very similar things to cover up the Wuhan outbreak as the Russians did to cover up Chernobyl when the plant blew up. So there's some parallels there, and I think people would be well served to educate themselves by watching the video.
And again, that's at Epoch Times. Give us the title on it if somebody wants to search it.
So it's coronavirus. I don't have the title right in front of me, but it's the coronavirus origins, and it's Epoch Times. And if you coronavirus origins, Epoch Times, that should give you the video.
Great. And one last kind of quick one. We've all heard the saga of Captain Brett Crozier, the aircraft carrier captain who put a letter out that ended up in the San Francisco Chronicle. It was warning about the coronavirus, a four-page letter. And he was fired and or actually removed from command. And also there was some discussion as to whether he would come back. As of late yesterday, there was still a dialogue that nothing is off the table, that the word from the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper. So where do you see this going?
I don't see it anywhere. I mean, the talk may be there, but the bottom line is this, Rick. The individual, the captain, sent essentially what would be otherwise secret information over an unclassified channel. Any movement or status of a major capital ship is considered classified, least secret. So he violated that. And secondly, I know for a fact, based on my conversations with those who know Tom Moodley, the acting Secretary of the Navy, Tom himself apparently had reached out to the captain and said, look, if you need anything, you contact me directly. So the fact that he'd gone outside of the chain of command, completely outside the Navy, what that information to me is a career ender. So I'm just telling, you know, I don't know the guy, the captain, don't know what happened, but I'm just saying based on my understanding of the basic facts, I don't see the captain coming back into command.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, as always, thank you so much for your perspectives.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. Great to be on.
You bet. 7:45 Saturday morning update, WMAL. KT McFarland is next, but right now we'll head to Michelle Murray in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On 270 southbound, just south of Shady Grove Road, there is an accident blocking the two left lanes. Stay to your right and use caution there. Also in Virginia, there is still that accident on westbound 66 at Business 234, blocking the two left lanes. Eastbound, though, you should find all travel lanes open. In the district, watch out for accident activity right now on South Dakota Avenue at Bladensburg Road. This is in northeast, so be careful through that area. And also keep in mind that in Rockville Falls Road is still closed southbound at Tuckerman Lane due to the pole and wires down in the roadway. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny, less wind today. We'll still have some breezes at times, around 10 to 15 miles per hour. High temperatures today, around 60 degrees. Lows tonight, back in the 40s. With increasing clouds late, we're talking by early tomorrow morning. For your Easter Sunday, mostly cloudy skies, isolated showers early on. I think a better chance during the evening. Highs around 70 degrees, so warmer. Overall, a nice end of the weekend. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It's 40 degrees at 7:47 on WMAL.
Stuck at home? Depend on WMAL for information and your friends as we get through the corona crisis together.
Because that's what matters.
Listen on your smart speaker, home computer, or the WMAL app.
I love your show.
105.9 FM WMAL.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Arrgh, mateys. Welcome to the ocean. I've sailed the seven seas 100 times and found something I like even more than me treasure. 'Tis the ocean, beautiful and clear. Right now, I'd be sailing over the Great Barrier Reef. It just shivers me timbers thinking of all the fish and coral below me. Wait, what's that floating by? The plastic bag! By Blackbeard's eye patch, that's disgusting! Why did you know that many of these things come from folks throwing them carelessly on the ground? It'd be true! Lend us a hand by always recycling and disposing of your trash properly. Boys, get the plank ready. Somebody's gotta dive in and get that bag. Any volunteers? All right, fine. I'll do it myself. Cannonball! Find out what you can do to help keep the oceans healthy at keepoceansclean.org. Brought to you by the Keep Oceans Clean Alliance and the Ad Council.
Time is running out. African penguin colonies have emptied in the last 5 years as their breeding populations have gone from 2 million pairs to less than 25,000. Together, we can turn things around. Your support to the San Diego Zoo Global Wildlife Conservancy helps support solutions by providing artificial nest boxes, hand-raising chicks for release, and rehabilitating injured penguins. So together, we can repopulate the colonies of our tuxedo-wearing friends. Join us now at endextinction.org.
You're so annoying.
You're so
annoying.
Stop copying me.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
7:49 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning and a happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you, too.
Well, thank you. I wanted to talk to you about President Trump's upcoming decision. He calls it the biggest decision he'll ever have to make in his life, and that is the decision on when to get America back to work, when to start to relax the stay-at-home restrictions that we've had in this country. And you have worked closely with the president, obviously, in your role as the Deputy National Security Advisor. You know what makes him tick. You know how he operates. And a sense of the gravitas that he is showing here. And I think he's had a different tone recently in his leadership.
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, I think that in a way that the Washington media will never give him credit for, and they'll certainly do just the opposite, this is his finest hour. I mean, look at how his statements have changed in the last month. You know, 6 months ago, he was talking about me, I'm the greatest, this is the most important. But he's now, especially with these evening press conferences, he's talking about we. He's giving the credit to the people who are on the stage with him, to the doctors. He's giving the credit to the governors. He's certainly giving credit to a lot of the private sector leaders who have stepped forward, from companies, testing companies, labs. And so I think that there's a real evolution in the leadership of Donald Trump. I mean, this is what he's good at. One of the reasons I liked him from the very beginning was, as a New Yorker, I saw what he did in the 1990s in New York. So there's Central Park and the skating rink in Central Park. For years, it had been closed, because it needed repair, it needed renovation, and the city of New York could never figure out how to do it. The city of New York was broke, and so it just languished. And here it was, the crown jewel of Central Park, and it was an eyesore. And it was sort of it was a symbol for how New York had failed and how government had failed. So Trump, whose office looks out over Central Park and looks out over that skating rink, he picked up the phone one day and he said, I've had it. I'll fix this darn thing. I'll get it working again. I'll do it at my own expense, and I'll do it in a year's time or 6 months' time. And so everyone said, oh, that's impossible, but sure, if you want to take a try, go ahead. What do we got to lose? So Trump got on the phone to one of the – he talked about the real problem in Central Park was that the ice skating rink would melt. You know, how do you keep ice frozen – even when the weather's not below freezing? So he said, well, I'll call the guys in Canada, the guys who do the outdoor hockey rinks in Canada. How do they do it? So he called, I guess, the Montreal Canadiens or whoever it was. And he said, how do you guys keep the ice cold? Well, he got an explanation. And then he said, well, can you do that here in Central Park? And the guy said, can you give me a week? And so Trump rebuilt Woolman Rink at Central Park. It was up and running in half the time he said it would take. It came in way under budget, which he paid for himself, and it was a perfect example of public-private partnership. And so I think that's what he's done as president. He's got this new crisis. Nobody knows how to fix it. Nobody's done this before. And so he's brought in a lot of private industry to help him fix it. And I think not only is it good for the country, but I think it shows us that we can actually solve problems. You know, the fatalities are way lower than the estimates were originally. And why is that? It's because Americans have risen to the challenge. So I give Trump full marks for high leadership in this, although you'd never know it if you looked at what the press coverage was.
Huh. Well, I wanted to talk to you about that, because he's reaching his highest approval ratings so far in his presidency. And that is in spite of the way the media has treated him. And you know, I would have thought with the fear that has spread over the country, the uncertainty that we've all faced and seen, that maybe the Democrats and maybe some of the media people could tone it down a little bit, just in terms of helping us to get through the initial phases of this, when we can at least see where it's going. But it's been this relentless attack on the president and his strategies, and watching those press briefings, they get pretty brutal at times. But he seems to be surviving, and I think the stronger he gets, the harder they're going to continue to hit.
Oh, yeah, because, I mean, they're really doubling down on their investment to destroy Trump. I mean, I think there are two points about this. Trump is getting high approval ratings for handling the crisis, and it's despite, as you point out, the 100% criticism he's getting from the press corps. And those daily press briefings, they don't just show off and showcase Trump and his team, but they show how the press corps has a snarky, petty little questions. But the other number that I'm looking at is the cable news ratings. Fox, which, I'm affiliated with and I think highly of, it airs those daily briefings. And Fox's ratings are going through the roof as people watch and tune into that hour, that station. The other cable networks, which now have refused to air these briefings, have they seen their viewership just crater? But it's common sense. If you're stuck at home like we all are, we're in quarantine, what do you want to watch? I want to watch the briefings, which have valuable information about how I can protect my family, what's happening in my area, or would I rather watch a bunch of bitter little ankle biters, I call them blabs, bitching about Trump? I mean, no wonder the country is starting to see anti-Trump stuff for what it is, which is a lot of bitter little ankle biters bitching.
All right, we've got probably about 3.5 minutes or so left. I want to talk to you about some of Attorney General Barr's comments this week, the Justice Department moving ahead with their investigations of a lot of the origins of the Mueller investigation, FISA abuse, these kinds of things. You were very close to it. You got caught up in it. You were interviewed by the FBI. You write about this extensively in your book, Revolution. And I wanted to get your perspectives on what you're hearing from the Attorney General. And just give us a little background as to what your sense of what was going on.
Well, what was going on at the time, nobody really understood, except, I mean, for me personally, my boss, Mike Flynn, the National Security Advisor, was forced to resign 3 weeks into the presidency for lying to the FBI, which he later has since said he really didn't do, but he pled guilty to doing it. And as a result of his firing, I was caught up in it, but caught up in a different way, because the FBI came after me too. They showed up after I left the White House in December. They showed up in the summer of 2017. So 3 months after I left the White House, and they knocked at my door in Long Island and wanted to interview me, quote, interview me. And they said, well, and I said, am I under some kind of suspicion? Or I knew General Flynn had come under suspicion and he was being interrogated by the FBI. But I didn't have anything to do with the Russians. I didn't think I was even part of their story, because I thought do was investigate Russian interference in the American election, not necessarily go after political leaders. But it turned out at the end, I mean, after hours and hours and hours and interview after interview with me, they didn't really care about me, but they wanted me to plead guilty to crimes I didn't commit, like lying to them. They wanted me to implicate other people, like the president, in crimes I didn't think he had committed. And they had a narrative that they were pursuing, which is Trump is evil, Trump colluded with the Russians, Trump should be removed from office. That was their narrative, and I wasn't going to reinforce it, and I wasn't going to lie to do it. And as a result, they threw the entire weight of the federal government after me, and they did it to others time after time. They bankrupted people, and they knew they were doing it. And now, as Barr is showing with these interviews that he's given just in the last couple of days, it turns out there was nothing to it. That the whole Russia investigation was a hoax, was a fraud. There was no reason to launch it. It was probably a Russian disinformation campaign, but it was something taken up by the Obama intelligence officials and senior people in the FBI and the Justice Department as a way of first interfering with Trump's campaign. And then once he won, it was an effort to sabotage him and destroy his presidency. It didn't, but it destroyed an awful lot of other people as it went along. And I describe it in just excruciating detail in my book, and how I, at one point, was just so beaten down by the investigation and by their relentless subpoenas and interrogations and going over the same questions again and again to try to trick me into saying something slightly different so they could jump up and say, aha, you've lied. I mean, I was so destroyed by it that I asked my husband, gee, should I just, you know, maybe I should just give them what they want. And, you know, he convinced me not to. I'm glad that I stood my ground and didn't bend, didn't get broken by them. But they tried to do it to everybody, and that's what they wanted to do to Trump.
Well, the story is in Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, and you can get that at Amazon.com. It's in Kindle form, so you could get it right now and get on it in the next hour or so. KT McFarland, as always, thank you so much for being with us, and very happy Easter to you and your family.
Thank you. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Garden Sense is next on WMAL, and we wish you a very happy Easter and Passover this weekend. And thank you for being with us on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.